as you get into that tapering period before your race, you know, your training is in the bag, and anything that you do in those, you know, last week or two is not going to improve your fitness level. So it's all about being kind to your body during that time, letting it rest.
This is Running for Real, the podcast for runners who know that for every runner's high, there are just as many lows. All those just missed PRs, easy runs that feel hard, injury blues, and more. Each week, we'll talk to running, health, and wellness experts about their highs, lows, and best advice to build our confidence. Running for Real is about being honest, being brave, and most of all, not feeling alone. And now here's our host, who hates citrus-flavored things, Tina Muir.
Hello, my friends. Thank you so much for joining me for the Running for Real podcast. I am excited that you are here, and I want to thank you so much as I have a moment for all the subscribers, all the reviews you've left, all the sharing. It truly means the world to me, and it's been great to see how much of a success Running for Real, the podcast, has been just immediately, and it's all because you guys have helped me grow it. So thank you. I really appreciate it. I just want to take a moment to mention that my husband and coach Steve has created marathon and half marathon training plans that are now available at tinamuir.com/training plans. And today I get to announce the 5 winners who entered the giveaway, which ended last week. And if you listen to the end of the episode, you'll find out who won. So make sure you stay tuned and see if you were one of the winners of the giveaway. If you did not win, but you do want to find the program, again, it will be at tinamuir.com/training plan. And you can also find it on the show notes for this episode. So last week was absolutely jam-packed with mental advice for training, racing, for peak performance with Dr. Brett McCabe. And today is a bit more of a fun one. I have Angie and Trevor from Marathon Training Academy. And between us, we've done a lot of podcast chats. I've been on their Marathon Training Academy podcast twice, and Angie was actually on Run to the Top. But today I have them both together, and it's so cool hearing the inside look at this, I guess, celebrity couple, you could call them. Angie and Trevor inspire runners from all over the world to give marathons a try, and you're going to see why they're so wildly popular. So that's enough from me. Let's get on with the episode. Hello to Angie and Trevor, my friends. Thank you so much for joining me for the Running for Real podcast. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great. It's great to see you again, Tina.
Yeah, thanks for having us on the podcast. This is exciting.
I know, I'm excited. This is going to be a fun one and a bit more of a, whenever I talk to you guys, it ends up being really casual and kind of just fun. I had quite a few people reach out to me when I talked about raising my hands when you interviewed me last time and how I didn't know what to do with my hands at the end of a race. So I realized that was probably more of the focus than it should have been about actually something helpful. But I guess if that makes people remember our episodes, then great. So speaking of that, I'm going to ask you guys, I've decided I'd like people to tell me a fun fact or a hidden talent that they have about themselves. So do each of you have something you'd like to share?
Sure. I mean, I wouldn't really call it a talent, but I really love to play the piano. Ooh. I took lessons as a child. And then at age 16, I convinced my parents to let me quit because I hated it at that point. So I took 20 years off from the piano and just started playing a couple of years ago. And I really use it for relaxation and enjoy it a lot. And of course, now I'm paying it forward by making my oldest 2 sons take lessons. So.
That's so cool. And that's so funny, isn't it? How often we things you did as a kid and you were forced to do, which running was probably one of them. We end up loving when we're older. We're just like, oh, why didn't I think to, you know, listen to my parents? And then you're experiencing now the other side of it. Like you're telling your kids, you should do this. And they're probably like, oh, mom, I don't want to. And
exactly.
It's so funny.
You'll thank me someday.
Yeah, exactly. That's cool though. I'm jealous. I've always wanted to be musical, but never really come to me. So.
Well, you could probably, teach a trained chimpanzee to play better than I do, but I still enjoy it. So there it is.
Yep. And that's all that matters. And Trevor?
She won't play in front of anybody because she's really shy about that.
What about you? Hopefully she'll play in front of you, right?
Well, not if I ask her to. She doesn't do anything on command. I haven't trained her well enough. I actually play the guitar, but Angie doesn't let me play it around her.
He knows 5 songs and he plays them every day. And so yeah, they've gotten a little bit old.
So the MTA band is not going to happen for many reasons here.
I don't think so.
I'm afraid not. I think the podcast will be our only collaboration.
Yeah. But I, was actually thinking about this question about like a hidden talent. I don't know if I have a hidden talent, but I'm actually a better downhill skier than I am a runner. So I don't know if that counts.
Yeah, I'd say that counts. Is that what you've always done that? Or is that something in the last few years you tried it and you're like, actually, I'm pretty good at this?
I grew up near the Sierras in California and my dad could get free lift tickets. So I grew up skiing and I'm pretty confident at it, but don't get to do it a whole lot in Missouri. So
Yeah.
I might be pretty rusty now.
Mm-hmm. It's probably one of those things like, you know, riding a bike, isn't it, though? You might get a bit rusty, but like, you can pick it up pretty easily.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it would, I mean, cross country skiing would be great cross training. We hardly get any snow where we live now. I think it snowed once this year and then it was gone in like an hour.
Did people freak out and stop buying canned food and
they
water?
Do that. Yeah, this is weird.
It's like no bread or milk in the store.
They'll cancel school. And I'm like, this is a Canadian summer out here. Why are you canceling? This is nothing. And I think it's snow challenge. I call the area snow challenge.
Oh, that's a good way of looking at it. Yeah, I think the same here in Kentucky. Okay, so I, you know, we've interviewed one another a few times. You've had me on MCA twice and I've had you on Run to the Top. But last time it was just Angie when I had Run to the Top. So I'm excited this time I've got you as a couple. So I wanted to ask, I want to kind of watch your reaction here more, even though the listeners can't see it. Because I get asked this all the time by Steve, but how does it work with you two, you know, working together, living together, doing everything together, running together, going to races together? How does it work? Because I know we get asked this and I'd love to hear what you two think about this.
We never have any disagreements.
Ever?
Big liar. I would say I'm probably more of like the time sensitive person. Like I have like this agenda, like we need to be at the starting area of the race at a certain time. And he's kind of more laid back.
Early.
You know, he's like, oh, we get there, you know. And so there's a lot of friction because we have, you know, very different personalities. Mm-hmm. I'm more of a type A personality. He's kind of more of a rebel, but, you know, so there is friction, obviously, in our relationship. But, you know, we managed to make it work for the greater good. And, you know, it is fun if you can realize that it would be really boring to be married to someone exactly like you.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to learn to appreciate those differences. Mm-hmm. And, you know, over the years, we've been married almost 14 years. So you kind of get to know the other person, how they're going to respond. And
and you just made me think. So you had Gretchen Rubin on the podcast recently.
Yeah.
What did you both get as your tendencies?
I'm a rebel and she's an upholder.
It's like the hardest pairing.
Is that what she said?
She says in the book, if an upholder and rebel stay married, then I'm like,
married. Wow.
No, we talked to her about that because we just had her on, I think in February, and we got a lot of laughs out of, you know, our upholder rebel relationship and idiosyncrasies that we have and stuff. It was fun talking to her about that. Like Angie wants to get to the marathon start line like an hour early and stand around and shiver.
Sounds reasonable to me.
And I'd rather sleep a little bit extra and get there and just sort of jump in right as the corral is starting to move.
Are you that one that's pushing to the front in the last minute?
He's still in the porta pot in the last minute.
Wait, the race is started.
I'm not running competitively. I'm just a middle of the pack runner. So, you know, I'll just jump in and try to have fun and not get too much in a rush.
So I'm sure most of your listeners are going to relate more with me who, you know, you kind of feel anxious if you're not there early and, you know, have those things under your control that you can. So, yeah, it's a little bit challenging.
I remember when she was trying to qualify for Boston and back in those days we had Angie's mom living close so she could watch her kids. And so Angie and I can go to these races. And we went to the Kentucky Derby Marathon in Louisville, you know, in your neck of the woods. And I was trying to get Angie to the starting line. I was doing the half. She was doing the full. And she wanted to qualify for that, for the Boston Marathon at that race. And there was this porta potty line that was just went forever. And there was only a couple minutes to the race start. And she wasn't going to make it to her corral. So I just asked these ladies if we can cut in line. And I told these ladies what her goal was and what we were trying to do. And of course, runners are really cool. And they're like, yeah, come on. We don't care about our time. So come cut right in.
I was mortified, of course. And if, you know, he had left when I told him we needed to leave, there wouldn't have been that issue at all.
So you learn as you go, I guess.
Yeah, no, this sounds like a pretty similar conversation that Steve and I have sometimes. So this is funny. Funny to hear it from someone else. And you mentioned, you go to all these cool races. Like, of course, you come to Kentucky, which I'm not going to say it's the best place ever, but I like it here. And that marathon is definitely a good one. But you do go like all over the world and just travel around to do all kinds of weird races and stuff. So I thought maybe I could ask you to name off some of the marathons in different categories. So firstly, I know this is like picking your favorite child, but a favorite marathon or a favorite race, I guess, from both of you.
I'll start off. I got the t-shirt on today, actually. The New Orleans Rock and Roll Marathon.
Is that just to rub it in that I didn't meet you that time?
Oh, that's right. We were there at the same year.
Anyway.
You were like 3 hours ahead of me probably at the race.
Keep going.
So I love the city of New Orleans. I think the Rock and Roll Marathon series is a lot of fun. They do a great job organizing it. And the finisher's medal has Mardi Gras beads. So
yeah, it does. It's a cool one. And Angie?
The first half is a lot more fun than the second half for those looking at the race. So if you're going to run the full marathon, just gut it out the second half because there's not much to see or there's not much crowd support.
Oh, really? Anyway. It's too early in the morning probably for all the drunks to be up.
Yeah.
It kind of runs through the park area along Lake Pontchartrain.
And it can get kind of hot. It was really hot down there this year from what I've heard. Mm. But still, I love... as far as races in the U.S., I think that is one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm. And Angie?
I would say, I mean, besides the Boston Marathon, which, is an incredible event, I really love the Marine Corps Marathon. Mm. I just think it has an incredible history. It's very patriotic. You just see so many incredible people who are participating in the race. And the starting area is just, they really do it up with, flyovers and parachuters. And so, yeah, I think that's just a really fun race.
Oh, cool. I've never done it. I've never been to it, but I've heard so many good things about it. So that'll have to go near the top of the list now.
That's all right.
How about weirdest race or strangest situation in a race you've come across?
I'm thinking back to a 50K that I did this summer in California. It was called the Shadow of the Giants 50K.
Yep.
And it's just this kind of, little rinky-dink trail 50K.
In the Mariposa Grove, California, near Yosemite.
So it was incredibly beautiful and scenic. And the race director was a piece of work, let me just tell you. I mean, talk about a little bit of sexual harassment going on. And, if he wasn't so old, you would have been like, I would have been really offended. It was just kind of one of those people that you're like, is he seriously just saying what I think he's saying?
And we're laughing about it because like this guy is... That was sort of his persona, his personality, and people, he almost has like a cult following, I think. Like people show up and do his races. His name is Baz, and he's so politically incorrect, but he really does care about people. He's like giving all these runners a hug, and especially the female runners. And he's giving out like expired beer and gel. And just really just weird, but... fun.
Definitely had a very strange vibe. You don't get a medal. It's just kind of all about, being out in the mountains and having this cool running experience. So I would say that was probably one of the most unique ones that I've participated in.
Yeah. And Trevor, was that yours too?
I was with the kids. I didn't run that event, but just a weird and very tough race is the Tupelo Marathon in Tupelo, Mississippi.
Okay.
Their motto is trample the weak, hurdle the dead.
Oh,
and
nice.
They always have like a skull and crossbones, Day of the Dead kind of theme. Mm-hmm. And it's really hot in September, Mississippi. So the marathon starts at 5 a.m. And I've only done it twice. I did the full marathon 1 year. And I've done a half marathon. I did the half marathon last year. But
he just does it for the shirt, which is like a skull and crossbones and the medal. They really do a good job with that.
Yeah.
So
it just has this vibe like. Okay, if you want to come down here and run it, you can. But if you don't want to, then we don't care. But we're going to be having this race and,
it's going to be hard and horrible.
Don't complain because this is what we're doing. But the people that run it love it. And lots of people do it like year after year.
Huh. I haven't even heard of that one. Well, that's a cool one. I just thought
this. Elvis Presley was born. Tupelo, Mississippi.
Okay, good to know. There's another, interesting fact there. Are you one of those people that's full of random trivia?
I don't know. Am I?
In certain areas, yes.
With when it comes to running locations, maybe, and what they're known for. So then how about best post-race food at an event? Any come to mind?
Wow. I love post-race food. The Missoula Marathon in Montana has an incredible spread of food afterwards. That was really good.
Watermelon on a hot day.
Yeah, that was really good.
I remember the Indianapolis Monumental Marathon had pretty good post-race food.
The Wine Glass Marathon in Corning, New York always does really good swag and post-race food. So yeah, I'm definitely all about the food.
Oh, yes.
I'm starving. I'm ready to eat everything.
I was saying the other day when I was doing a Facebook Live chat, I was saying that, like, you know, you want to make your pre-race meal really, really boring, like almost too boring, just the most simple thing but you can eat, and even in the week leading up to it. But then in your post-race meal, you can make up for it and go for the most crazy, intense, over-the-top, rich food to kind of balance out all the boring food you've been eating. So
exactly.
That's how it should be.
I might add that the Marine Corps Marathon has a donut mile.
What is
it? It's Angie's favorite mile.
So they offer
They serve Dunkin' Donuts like about mile 23. So
yeah, I mean, it's like the perfect mile. Like, I mean, you're just dying, ready to be done. And then boom, you get donut holes.
Huh. Interesting. I don't know if I could pick them up though, if it was at that mile. Don't you feel a bit sick?
I'm guessing the elites probably don't stop.
Yeah.
But, you know, like the middle back of the pack, it's like all about that.
I'm like picking up extra donuts off the ground. And
right. So are you going to be doing, have you done a Krispy Kreme challenge, or would you do it?
What's funny is I don't even eat donuts in everyday life. Just at a marathon at mile 23, I could slam some serious donuts, but I don't know. What is the Krispy Kreme challenge? You have to eat a donut every mile?
Yeah. I don't know if you do it every mile or if you do it all in one go and then you have to run afterwards.
No, I don't. That doesn't sound like fun.
Either way.
I wouldn't mind trying like a beer mile.
Oh.
One of those kind of things.
Yeah.
Where you got to, you know, chug a little bit of beer every mile or something. I might try that.
I have heard there's a beer half marathon, I guess, which makes me feel a little bit sick if that's really what it sounds like, because I can't even imagine like drinking 13 beers, let alone trying to do it while running. But okay. And then I did have a few more, but I want to ask you guys about marathon training and stuff like that. So what about a marathon that you would recommend as a challenge? Like if someone wanted something that was completely unique or like tough, what would you say?
I would say the Leadville Trail Marathon in Leadville, Colorado that's the hardest marathon I've done. I mean, it was harder than the 50-mile race that I did. It was because you start in Leadville, Colorado, which is above 10,000 feet, and then you start climbing from there. And so, you know, it took during the final climb to the very highest elevation that we got to, it took 30 minutes to go 1 mile because literally I'm just like stopping, like pretending to take pictures, but I'm like, you know, gasping for air. I was not acclimated, you know, coming from basically sea level here in Missouri.
300 feet.
It was amazingly incredible. You know, the views were spectacular, but was the toughest race that I've ever done. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that would, you know, probably take most people outside of their comfort zone, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And Trevor, anything, or would you say that too?
I didn't run that. I don't think I'd want to run that. No, maybe someday, but the Tupelo Marathon, I have to go back to it. It's in September and it's really hot in Mississippi and miserable. And that's maybe why they say trample the weak, hurdle the dead.
Very humid. Yeah.
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 Nice. And it's a little bit hilly too now since they've changed the course.
Okay, cool. Well, you've given us some good examples of races that people can try if they're looking for something different. So yeah, so speaking of which, so Marathon Training Academy, I mean, I don't really need to explain what you focus on there. And although you do obviously have people from all levels and all distances, but it seems like marathons have become kind of like the go-to thing. Like people don't feel like they're a real runner unless they run a marathon. So I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that and why you think it is that the marathon is almost the one you have to do to get that respect. I mean, Angie, you probably can speak to this more as you've done. I think, Trevor, you do only a percentage of the ones Angie does, usually the marathons. Is that correct?
I've done 12. Angie's done, what, like 48?
Yeah.
Counting ultras, yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
I think the marathon is one of those bucket list type things because it represents something that still has the power to kind of wow people. And I don't think that's why most people do it, not just to like impress people. I think once you start running, sometimes there is that tendency just to think like, how can I push myself? How can I extend my distance? And I know for me, it was just one of those things that became a personal challenge. And I think for most people, you know, you can gut your way through a 5K, especially if you're not trying to race it at top speed. You know, training for a half marathon, very challenging, but you know, there's a good percentage of people who do it. But if you look at the marathon, still less than 1% of the population will ever complete a marathon in their lifetime. So, you know, it's one of those pretty elusive clubs, I would say. And it's one of those things you really can't or shouldn't just kind of wing it in your training. You know, you're going to pay for it if you do not put in the time and the effort to train for a marathon. So I think it's one of those challenges that still remains outside of most people's comfort zones.
But yet it's a challenge that we believe most people are able to do. You know, like our tagline in our show is you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life. And we've interviewed lots of people who've, you know, you would never think that they would have been able to run a marathon, but they started making changes and taking action. And through this process, so many things came together for them and they have gone on to do it. We have people in part of our group. I know Angie has a coaching client who's in his 70s. We've got a lady who's, I think, still in high school that we're coaching right now, and people from all over the world and people that have health challenges they've overcome, have lost a lot of weight. We've interviewed a lady who's had Parkinson's and had to have basically brain surgery. And now she runs marathons just all the time. It's just amazing. So it's a daunting challenge. It's an epic challenge, but it's one that is within reach of people. So that's a kind of, I think that really makes it unique.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that you set your mind to it, you know, and you really truly have that inner desire to train for a marathon that it is possible.
Do you think at all, you know, there's been some stuff in the press over the last few years about, oh, everyone can do a marathon. It's not really impressive anymore. You know, you need to go to an ultra or do something different because, you know, everyone's doing marathons. And do you think that's because you mentioned about, you know, people training for it and it's something anyone can do if they do the training, but do you think it's maybe because people aren't training and they are kind of winging it? Or do you have any thoughts on why people are saying this and do you agree with it?
You know, I would say probably a lot of the people who say, you know, the marathon's not much of a challenge anymore, probably a lot of those people actually haven't even run a marathon before. you know, they're just kind of looking at statistics like, well, you know, this many people and the marathon boom that hit, you know, the United States and other countries, it's becoming more popular. So we got to look to something else that is less heard of, you know, and I think in the running community, it just depends on where you're starting out. You know, I would say it's still a big challenge. Now, people approach it with different motivations. You know, some people are looking to set a PR or a specific time they're looking to get. You know, some people are looking to qualify for Boston or the New York City Marathon. Some people just are looking to go the distance and cross that finish line strong and healthy. And so there's different reasons for people to approach the marathon. And I think there, you know, it's often easy for some people to get elitist that, you know, the marathon, like, well, if you don't break 4 hours in the marathon or if you don't, you know, do this or that, that you're not a real runner, you're not a real marathoner. And, you know, I would just say that people have different motivations. For some people, it's more of a social type thing. You know, it's a healthy way to get together with people they enjoy being around and a good way to travel. So, yeah,
I'm not sure like where that attitude is coming from. I don't, and I can't say I've really heard that. I think there's two things I would say. One is there's something to be said about respecting the distance of a marathon.
Yeah, so true.
No matter how many you've run, you could go out there one day and run a marathon and it just humble you. I mean, so much could go wrong. So before someone says, oh, this is a piece of cake, just give it enough time. You'll probably have a bad race and you'll change your tune. And it's always important to respect the distance. And the other thing I would say is for people that are non-runners, they look at what we do and they're amazed that anybody can run that far. And most of my friends still are, you know, in the community that we live are non-runners. And just running 10 miles seems pretty daunting when you're new, when you're starting out. So those that are listening, if you have run marathons, you have like this superpower to the larger population around you.
So true. And I'm glad you said that as well, because I think that is the case. And it's funny you mentioned about humbling. I remember the day before I ran the California International Marathon in December, I went to had a coffee with Matt Fitzgerald. And I said to him, he said to me, what's your plan for tomorrow? And I told him, and I said, what about you? And he said, well, you know, I should be able to run sub 250 with my eyes closed. I'd love to be able to run 240. And I was like, oh, okay, why do you say that? And he's like, because you never know with the marathon. It can just get you when you least expect it, even with, I don't know how many marathons he's done, but a lot. Mm-hmm. And then sure enough, the next day, I think he ran like 257. And I texted him and said, what happened? And he was like, well, I was right. It humbled me. And that's so even someone like that who, you know, is a author and knows what he's doing, has written all these books, even he said he should be able to run 250 with his eyes closed. Yet he still didn't do it because something went wrong. So yeah, you're exactly right. So Angie, you mentioned this, but I'm sure Trevor, you have some thoughts on this as well about being a real runner. And that this is something that runners often, you know, discuss. And I get a lot of people saying to me, well, I'm not an elite runner, so, you know, I don't X or Y or whatever it is. What are your thoughts on when people say what they need to do to be a real runner? Is there such a thing as a real runner?
I guess my perspective is if you do any amount of running and you identify yourself as a runner, you are a runner. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think there's any level or any, you know, that you have to attain. I mean, certainly you don't have to run a marathon to be a runner. You can just be happy doing a run walk and still be a runner. I think it really just comes down to how you choose to identify yourself. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, that's what would be what I would say. I'd say people need to claim their identity as a runner and they will start living that out. It'll start, you know, kind of manifesting itself in their life more as they pursue that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Great.
Yeah. We interviewed a psychologist one time named Jeff Brown. He wrote the book, The Runner's Brain.
Yep.
And there's a chapter in the book called I Think, Therefore I'm a Runner. And he says that you don't start running and then eventually you earn a title of runner. You basically are a runner if you decide to be, and you begin to form that identity. And then running becomes easier because if you identify as a runner, then you're going to be more prone to get your shoes on, lace them up and go out there because you want to live, you know, in congruency with your identity. Mm. You want things to be natural. So if you're struggling to motivate yourself to get out and do it, he says you could put little cues in your environment. You know, like today I got this marathon shirt on that I got at a race, and I'll wear shirts like that. Or, you know, we have our medals displayed and things like that. Just things that remind us of what our identity is.
That.
So that makes it more natural then to go out and run.
Mm-hmm. You're running shoes by the door, you know, just little things that remind you that you are a runner and you're pursuing that, whatever your goals with running are. They'll probably change throughout the years. They won't always remain the same, but keeping that core identity as a runner will, you know, really improve your life.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've
that.
Seen in my own life and for other people too.
So true. So then on the other side of things, how do you stop that from becoming so much of your identity so that when you get injured or have to, you know, family stuff comes up or like not losing that sense of identity?
Well, I think, like you said, if running is the only thing or the one thing that you identify as, there's probably going to be some kind of imbalance that's going to manifest itself in your life. You know, mm-hmm. your relationships may suffer, your health may suffer, things like that. So, I mean, running is one part of my identity. You know, it's something that I've identified as for many years and I hope to be a runner for life, but it's not the most important part of my identity. And you have to keep that in perspective. You know, even for us where running is, you know, a business for us even, but it's not the most important thing. And keeping that in perspective that my overall health is more important than any short-term running goals mm-hmm. that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to rein myself in sometimes because, you know, sometimes it can kind of become a beast, mm-hmm. Feeding that constant desire to do more and to keep up with maybe people that you admire. You really have to just take a look at your own life and your own health and try to be wise about the things that you choose to pursue within the running world.
And maybe try to take ego out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ego gets us in trouble when we take a good thing like running, but we make it an ultimate thing so that so much of our self-worth and feelings about ourselves is based on our success in that area. And it can be crushing, you know, if you start to experience setbacks. in pursuit of that thing that you've made so ultimate and so defining to, mm-hmm. to yourself.
So true. So true. And actually, I was talking to Tawny Prazak yesterday, who's a good friend of mine, another podcast host. She was saying about a book called Ego is the Enemy, which she recommended that I read. I don't know if either of you have heard of it.
I think I've heard of that. Yeah.
I want to check it out. And I will put a link in the show notes for anyone else who is interested in reading it. But she said it was really good for that exact kind of thing. So interesting. Mm. So I wanted to talk about you guys and what you do and your athletes. You mentioned it a little bit there, Angie, but tell us a bit about what you offer for anyone who is interested and kind of likes what they hear through, you know, the podcast or even just hearing you right now.
Well, we have a website that
you have really, a website.
We have a website.
Wow. No, sorry.
You didn't let me tell you.
Didn't interrupt you.
You can tell how prepared I was for this question, right? Yeah. People want to check us out. MarathonTrainingAcademy.com. It's a good place to start. So what we're really known for is the podcast, mm-hmm. but it's really focused. We help all kinds of runners, but I think our specialty is helping beginners. So a lot of the stuff over there on the website and on the podcast is geared toward, you know, people that want to take this journey, build up a running base, you know, run the first half marathon, run the first marathon, and then move up to bigger challenges. So right now we have a pretty active, you know, private group that we're helping people train for various goals. We have 4 coaches right now.
Are you 2 the coaches, part of them?
Angie's a coach. Okay. She's also a registered nurse. And then we have 3 other coaches, Chris, Lynn, and Jen. And they're spread out all over the place. Chris is actually in China. But these are great folks and, you know, accomplished runners and also certified coaches. And so we're able to kind of pair people up that want to have that one-on-one mm-hmm. touch. And see, what else are we doing?
Facebook, Instagram.
Yeah.
All that good stuff.
Yeah. Just empowering people to run a marathon, change their life, because we believe it's a life changing journey. Yep. It was for us. And we've now heard from, you know, probably thousands of people since we've been doing this that have testified to the same thing.
Yeah.
No, and we have a website. Did I tell you that?
You do? Okay.
Did I mention that?
In this day and age, I'd be very, very concerned if you didn't. And then something for people who are, you know, training for a race and they are coming up to their big race and they're nervous, they're doubting themselves, wondering how are they ever going to make it through the race? What do you usually tell your clients or what do you recommend for people to kind of believe in the training and believe that they've got it?
I'm going to let Angie answer that since she's the one that has clients.
Well, I think it's really important to, you know, especially realize as you get into that tapering period before your race, that, you know, your training is in the bag and anything that you do in those, you know, last week or two is not going to improve your fitness level. So it's all about really being kind to your body during that time, letting it rest and get ready to have a great effort at the race. And it's also really important to have that mental preparation. You know, we think so much about putting in the miles and the cross training and massage and, you know, all that stuff that goes into it. It's so important, but our mind is really what drives all of that. Mm-hmm. And so I really encourage my coaching clients and, you know, through the podcast for people to develop positive mantras, because we all have those self-doubts that come into our head, you mm-hmm. know, acknowledging that doubt, acknowledging that fear, whatever it is, and then replacing it with something positive that you can tell yourself. And then when you get to that starting line, I just really try to focus on gratitude that, you know, you have a strong, healthy body, that you are there, you know, it's an exciting event, and just really try to soak in the blessing of it all and realize that whatever happens during the race, it's still really amazing that you get to be there. And, you know, so many people wish they could be in that position. And so I think gratitude is really a big part mm-hmm. of it.
Oh, I love that. That's so good as well, because it's something that we quite often forget about when we're in it, like we're putting all this pressure on ourselves. We have to run this or that, but as people say, and it's so true, just getting to the start line healthy is like the biggest part. So yes. True.
And it's normal. I mean, if you would take a survey of all the people standing around before the start of a marathon and ask how many people are feeling nervous, probably the majority of people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We should do that for a podcast episode. Just, I got this little digital recorder that I bring around and get little sound bites.
Roving reporter.
I should go up to random strangers and ask them if they're nervous.
Are you nervous? Yes.
Thank you. I am, with that tape recorder in my face. Yeah.
How do you feel right now?
Exactly.
Like, who are you? Although maybe you've got your, do you have t-shirts that say Marathon Training Academy on them?
Yeah.
You do? Oh, that's cool. I've never seen those. I'll have to look out on your, go creep on your Instagrams and stuff.
Well, we're sort of in the middle of getting like a new supplier, so don't look yet.
Okay. It's a work in process. Yeah. Another a rework in process.
So, no, I've done like 12 marathons now, but I still get nervous before everyone. And mm-hmm. it's like something in the back of my mind is saying, what are you going to do to yourself here? You're about to go through a beating.
Yeah.
Why did you sign up for this? Yeah, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
You paid to go through this pain and suffering.
But you go through that in the race as well, don't you? I go through that like all the time in the race. Like, why can't I be a normal person who sits and watches TV on a Sunday morning?
Why did I pick a different hobby or career?
then it's amazing how fast you forget it, like mm-hmm. after you finish and you get your medal and you get some replenishment, some fluid in you, something to eat. And the rest of the day, it's just like cloud nine.
Mm-hmm. Ready to sign up again.
Yeah, usually does. That Sunday evening is runners all logged into there. I'd love to see like tracking of when runners tend to sign up for races, because I'd imagine most runners kind of do it at the same time.
Post-race euphoria.
Yeah, yeah. And you're wired from the race, you know, because you can never sleep after a race because you're too excited. Well, I am anyway.
At least a few hours.
Yeah. So then let's talk about the podcast. So I've talked about it before when I had you on, Angie, on the Run to the Top podcast. So you've been going for, from what I read, just coming up on 7 years, which is yep. amazing. And
thank you.
So exciting. And then Trevor, you wrote on I can't remember whether it was a tweet or something about you know, you haven't run out of people to talk to yet. I get asked this all the time with the podcast, like, how do you not run out of people to talk to? So what would you like to say about that, like when people think that, like, how after 7 years are you not covered everything?
Yeah, you know, running and marathon training is such a deep subject, so we can go in an inch wide and a mile deep, because we try to stay focused on marathon training. So we're not like really talking about, you know, how to improve your 5K speed or something. But just within that one topic, there's so many little facets to explore and so many amazing guests. We really have no trouble finding amazing guests. Like Tina Muir. Have you ever heard of her? She's an amazing runner.
Nah, and skip that episode.
And we actually get a lot of authors, and we have turned people away. There's people that pitch us to get on the show, and mm-hmm. but we've been able to so far manage. And another cool thing is Angie's also very knowledgeable and does excellent research into topics. So sometimes it'll just be her and I, and we'll just go deep into topic.
That's good.
And she creates the content, and I just ask dumb questions, and it works.
So that far, makes so it good. More fun. Yeah. No, that's one thing I love about the podcast is it's so like, even like this right now, it's so conversational, and it's not like kind of forced about, so tell me about your back history of being a runner. Like, it's very like fun, kind of easy to laugh along yeah. with. And I can just imagine people running along listening right now, and they're kind of like chuckling to themselves. I mean, we've all done that where we've been listening to a podcast or something, and you mm-hmm. kind of laugh and you're like, oh, I bet everyone is thinking I'm like a crazy person.
Well, that's what I'm after right there. I want laugh out loud funny. I want people to make fools of themselves because they're laughing so loud at the gym. Or here's my goal, Tina. I want someone to laugh so heartily at something on our podcast that they fall off a treadmill and have to, of course, they don't get hurt. They just fall off.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, what if someone does that and then now they call you from the hospital and say, hey, I'm going to come sue you because you tempted fate and you told the yes. world that you said to the universe that I should fall off a treadmill and I did.
I think one thing that people enjoy, you know, any podcast that you start to follow over time is the way a person, you know, their story develops and you kind of become invested, you know, even in their lives a little bit. And so, you know, we're just average, normal people. I mean, you wouldn't look twice at us if we were at the mall. You know, we just have this story and, you know, a lot of awesome guests and, you know, of course, the great topic of running to delve into.
We really want to take runners on a journey, mm-hmm. but the journey has to be about them. We don't want to just talk about ourselves because that's boring. But if we can share stories that connect with where they're at and their mm-hmm. journey that they can, you know, draw from, then that's what we try to do.
Yep, I love that. And then could I ask you, do you have a favorite episode, or is this just too hard to choose? other than the Tina Muir episode.
You know what? As far as episode, I always love talking to Tim Noakes. That guy explodes my mind every time we talk to him. Mm-hmm. And he's such a gracious guy. You know, he's a South African, you know, running scientist. And have you had him on your show?
No, actually, I haven't.
Try to get him. He's such a gracious guy.
Isn't he impossible to get a hold of, though? Unless you're in the know, in the friendship circle, which you apparently are.
Oh, wow. I didn't know I was in the friendship circle. Like, I'll make a connection for you. But then we had our Boston Marathon race recap when Angie qualified and went down there and ran it. That was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. I enjoy having different guests on. Like, Gretchen Rubin is one of my favorite authors, and we've had her on the podcast a couple of times. Just being able to talk to some of our running heroes is really exciting. Yep. You know, I don't go back and listen to the episodes because I feel like it's really awkward to, you know, hear my own voice. it just kind of flows away for me. But yeah, we've had the privilege of talking to a lot of everyday runners and of course a lot of the running greats on the show, and it's really exciting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever think that the podcast would get as big as it did? Like, was that ever like, if you'd have said to yourself 10 years ago, you're going to have a podcast and you're going to get over 100,000 downloads a month, what would you say?
If you would have told me it would have been about running, I would have laughed because I hated running.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, this is how far this journey's taken, because mm-hmm. I've gone from just being a total slouch and non-runner to now being a marathoner. But yeah. No, I wouldn't have thought it. And we just have a really great audience. And right from the beginning, these folks were very supportive and we started hearing from people and we've gotten to meet a lot of them in real life. They're real people.
Like real people.
No, they're amazing folks, people that you'd want to have as neighbors, mm-hmm. you know, and relatives.
10 years ago, I didn't know what a podcast was. So that
that's true.
Tells you, you know, most of us, it's kind of a newer industry. And when Trevor, you know, broached the thought of starting a podcast, I was like, why would people want to listen to us? You know? And then my second thing was, well, if we do this, then you have to start running because that would be really awkward. We have a podcast on marathon training and you don't run. I mean,
yeah.
So was that really the driving force to what started you running, Trevor?
Yeah, because I was just kind of dabbling in it. I mean, I've always been active, but I like team sports and running. I didn't really care for just running by itself. Mm. So I was sort of dabbling and maybe was up to like a mile or 3 miles. But Angie, I knew that her knowledge could help a lot of people. And she had run marathons and, of course, has a nursing background. So I pitched the idea and that was the deal. That was the condition that I had to become more active in my running and build up. And so you can actually go way back into the archives and there's a recap of my first half marathon. It was in Little Rock, Arkansas at that crazy, that's another crazy fun marathon. And we should mention the Little Rock. That's when they have the marathon medals are like as big as a plate.
Oh.
And it's kind of zany. But I remember just running that first half marathon and my feet feeling so beat up. I felt like someone had held me upside down and like slapped the soles of my feet with a boat oar for like 3 hours.
It's a strange way of describing it as well.
I know. I was just like tenderfoot. I couldn't walk. But I finished in 2:02. So I was pretty happy about that time because I wanted to finish in around 2 hours. And I thought I'll never do a marathon. This is too hard. This half marathons are enough.
And but, then here you are. Yep, I thought that
I've
was
been drinking
funny.
The Kool-Aid. I've been drinking the Kool-Aid ever since.
You have. You're going to start going with Angie to the ultras soon, right?
Yeah, I'll probably do one someday.
Mm, there you go. It's in there. Although I thought that was really funny when you described you wanted to run around 2 hours for the half marathon. That, again, shows that difference between you because, Angie, I bet you wouldn't say I want to run around 2 hours, right? You would have said I want to run 1:59:59 or something. Whereas you, Trevor, you're like, oh, I'll run around 2 hours. That's good. All right. I am going to hit you with the running for real 4 questions. So firstly, you can either both answer this or you can just one of you answer it. A unique nutrition tip or something that you enjoy nutritionally that you think people would like to try or should try.
I guess for me, I don't think this is unique. I mean, I'm certainly not reinventing the wheel here, but for me, planning nutritionally is so important. I feel like if you leave it to the last minute when you're tired and you're hungry and you don't know what you're going to make for dinner, it's probably not going to be a healthy choice. Mm-hmm. So I really encourage people to make a meal plan for the week, do all their grocery shopping at once, which helps remove temptations by going to the store, you know, 5 times a week. And then, you know, just really having those things that you're going to make. And I think that really can help take your running to the next level if you are dialed in nutritionally. You know, we don't eat a perfect diet either, you know, but we really generally try to, you know, at least 80 to 90% of the time be eating healthy whole foods. Mm-hmm. And of course, we have three kids, so it's very important for us to give them a good nutritional foundation as well. So,
yep.
That's...
Trevor, anything to add? Or
I was actually just on Facebook answering a question about what to eat before a race. And something that Angie and I have been doing for years now is just running on an empty stomach, believe it or not. So nothing. I mean, I'll have coffee because I'm a coffee drinker, but that's it. And so I'll go out and I'll do a half marathon, a completely empty stomach, marathon. I mean, I'll take UCAN. Yeah.
Wow.
I'll take my UCAN, but as far as like any solid foods, like a banana or oatmeal, I haven't done that for years.
Wow. And Angie, you're the same?
I do. Well, I fuel with Generation UCAN about 30 minutes before the race. I just empty stomach. Okay. For me, it's just I would get digestive issues that would crop up and, you know, I don't really enjoy visiting the porta pot 10 times during a race.
No,
so
it's
helpful for me.
Yeah. I was saying to someone yesterday that UCAN is, I think, the only thing any nutritional product I've heard of absolutely no one having any digestive issues at all. Like, I've never heard of a single case. So if you guys want to check that out, I will put links in the show notes to all of these things we talk about today, including a link to UCAN at tinamuir.com/episode8. Okay, well, let's go on to the next question. If you would both share a running for real moment, maybe a funny moment or something that happened to you where, you know, you can just be honest and kind of show people that you're only human, like you mentioned.
Well, something that happened to me yesterday, I was at this kind of favorite trail that we have. It goes around an old golf course. And I was running in the morning. I tend to drink like a lot of water in the morning or tea. And so I was really, my bladder was getting full. And about halfway through the loop, they have this porta pot that I've used a few times. And like, oh, good. I hope it has toilet paper, you know, one of those woman's concerns. So I get in there, it has toilet paper, you know, I'm in the money. Start using the bathroom, reach for the toilet paper. And all of a sudden, like fire breaks out on my finger. It feels like it's just so painful. And I realize a wasp had made its home in the toilet paper roll.
Oh, no.
So, you know, this wasp falls off my finger and I'm just like, you know, basically bolting out of the place with my pants half up, you know, my finger throbbing. And, you know, I was thinking, this is one of those moments that, you know, this non-Instagrammable, non-Facebook moments. Yeah. You know, people do not brag about this kind of stuff on Facebook. You know, it's always these like, oh, I'm at the top of the world, you know, moment. Yeah. And it's not, you know, like pants in one hand and your finger like swelling to three times its normal size on the other. So
It'd probably be more like someone would hold the hand out and have a wasp delicately sitting on the top. Be with nature.
Exactly. Nature hates me, basically. So,
well, thank you for sharing that. And Trevor, anything?
So this has to be an embarrassing or just
a real like
moment.
A real moment as a runner, you know, something that happened that, you know, people can either laugh at or like resonate with because they've been through it.
You know, I've had to skip a race before. I was signed up for the Tupelo Marathon a couple years ago.
You are just hammering this race.
I know.
Yeah, it's weird how that turns out. They should pay me a little.
Anyway, keep going.
Commission. Anyway, I started developing an Achilles issue and I talked to a physical therapy doc about it and decided, yeah, I need to rehab this and not go. So I was really disappointed with myself. And I was building up for, I think, the Marine Corps Marathon. So the Tupelo Marathon definitely wasn't like a goal race. Which is something I wanted to do. But I remember just feeling pretty discouraged about getting injured. I mean, it wasn't a full-blown injury, but I just, you know, had to skip a race. So if anyone's had to DNS, did not start, and you probably spent $100 that you're not going to get back, it happens.
Oh, yeah, it does. And I'm glad you mentioned that as well, because that's not one that I think we would think of, but it is a moment where you're frustrated and annoyed, you know, at yourself and that you, you know, essentially, like you said, wasted that money. So yeah, thank you for sharing that. And then on the other end of things, what about a high moment? What a moment was that meant a lot to you? So Angie, I guess maybe start.
Wow. I guess probably I think back to a race that was a really high moment for me was during the Foot Traffic Flat Marathon in 2014 when I qualified for Boston. It was just one of those races where you're like running along, you're looking at your watch, you're like, I probably shouldn't be running this fast, but it feels so good. And it's just like everything that could go right went right, you know, and those are really rare races, to be honest, you know, for me. And so it was just amazing. I didn't feel like it was that hard and ended up qualifying for Boston. And you know, that really sticks out in my mind. It's just one of those times when you feel like you're in flow.
Yeah, yeah. Those do not happen often. So
no, they don't.
I enjoyed that. And I'm glad it got you a BQ. So
yes.
Congrats on that. And Trevor?
I just feel that high moment every time I finish a marathon. I mean, there's been a couple where I've run and I didn't feel as tired. Afterwards. I mean, it didn't really like beat me up, and I don't know what, maybe just a good day for me. My training was better. You know, I peaked right at the marathon, but there's been some that I've done that have felt easier. And marathon's never easy, but dare I say, there's been a couple I've run that have been like, yeah. And I could still run further if I wanted to.
And that's always the best. That's always the feeling we're searching for, even though most of the time it doesn't get that way.
That's right.
But
chasing that.
And then, so speaking of races, what are you telling yourselves on the start line when you're like just before you're about to go? What do you tell yourself?
I always feel really good. For me, the most stressful part of the whole race is just getting to the starting line. So once I'm in the corral there, like I just try to really stay positive and, you know, not think too far ahead, I guess, and just really try to remind myself that I'm so grateful to be there, that I have a strong, healthy body, that no matter what happens out there, I'm just going to do my best and try to enjoy the moment and try to smile. So that's.
And she does. I mean, I think she smiles every mile. I haven't seen a race photo yet with her not smiling.
Aww, that's
I think
so
it's scientifically
cool.
Proven that if you smile, it actually makes it feel easier. And I always try to remind myself to look like I'm having fun. You know, for the spectators who are looking in, maybe thinking, what are these crazy people, you know, putting themselves through? That, you know, really when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, we do this for fun. And so I want to make it look fun.
Oh, no, that's good. And I think something that most of us don't think about enough. So thank you. And Trevor, anything? What do you tell yourself?
For my first marathon, Angie paced me. It was the St. Louis Rock and Roll Marathon. And I told myself at the beginning and at most every mile, I told myself this this mantra: don't let your wife think you're a wimp.
I guess that works. It's effective. You want to be the macho, be her knight in shining armor. So I guess
I don't think I achieved that, but I did finish.
Didn't?
He contemplated locking himself in a porta pot to get away from me and my pacing.
Oh, were you like a slave driver there? Like, get back out here.
Well, you know, he told me what his goal was. And so I'm like, okay, let's keep going with this. And you know how it is that you tend to rethink your whole life the last few miles of a marathon. So
that's so cool. You get to experience that together though. That's one thing I wish I could run a marathon with Steve, but don't think it's ever going to happen. So
you never know. Never say never.
Yeah, that's true. And one more thing before I go. So I have been trying to create this movement around power poses. So when you stand on the start line, you know, like standing there confident. And I've been asking people to use the hashtag R4R power pose. And I'm going to ask, will you guys share a power pose when you're at your next race with me, with the community, with us, of what you guys do on the start line, be it your hands on your hips, your hands on your head, just some kind of like power pose. You up for that?
I've never thought about doing a power pose. Yeah, I'd be up for that.
Sounds good. Yeah. Cool.
I'll look forward to seeing it.
Nice.
So you want us to take a picture of ourselves doing a power pose?
Yes.
And then with that hashtag?
Yep. R4R power pose.
Ah, cool.
Okay. Well, guys, thank you so much for coming on the show. This was so much fun. And I always love talking to you both. And I look forward to hopefully redoing this again with a 3.0. And this has been fun. So thanks.
Thank you so much, Tina.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, Tina, and keep up the good work.
Did you know they have a website? And Trevor likes the Tupelo Marathon, just in case you missed those. But joking aside, we will be with full show notes and everything we talked about today, with links to the marathon and half marathon training programs that my coach and I made. I've discussed those a little bit, but if you want to find out more information, and with the show notes, that will be at tinamuir.com/episode8. I hope you will continue to share this podcast and these episodes with your friends. It means so much that you helped me spread the word, and it's doing so well. And I want to thank you for that, because I could not have done it without you. We might even close in. We're getting close to 100,000 downloads even within the first month. So I'm really excited about that. And yeah, this one was a little bit skewed because I did have those four episodes in one go, but it's pretty exciting start. So thank you guys so much for helping me with that. So I also want to say a big congrats to Tracy Saar, Hugh Dodwell, Ryan Carpenter, Ashley Maynard, and Elizabeth Kim. They were the winners of the marathon and half marathon training programs that I did host the giveaway for. And I want to thank everyone who voted, but let's send a special congrats to those guys there who won the giveaway. So I hope they will enjoy the program, and I hope you will continue to check it out too, especially if you're looking for a program. I've mentioned a lot about my husband and coach Steve and just how much of a genius, he'll hate me saying that, but he really is so good at peaking people on time for the race. So if you do have a half marathon or marathon coming up, it might be something to consider. So next week, we have a pretty real episode to talk about, and we're going to be discussing amenorrhea, which, you know, many of you know that I have been going through. And I have Dr. Nicola Rinaldi, who is the author of No Period, Now What, which has become my Bible during this time, and Heidi Greenwood. But before the men check out, I have some interesting findings for you. It's actually not as safe as you think it is just to be a man or be someone who is not having any issues. There's actually a lot of things that go on underneath, and not just through the cycle. You know, men can have similar health issues, long-term health issues in particular, but it's just not talked about as much because they don't have that regular documentation every month to let you know that everything is running correctly. And as for Heidi's story, it is incredibly powerful. You will not want to miss this one. So make sure you stock up on the tissues as you will need it. And I will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Running for Real podcast. Be sure to check out tinamuir.com for show notes and even more helpful running information.